Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Mike Rowe here with a few thoughts on my favorite sweatshirt, a classic zip-up hoodie that used to be navy blue but has since faded to what the fashionistas call a distressed indigo. It's 13 years old, soft as a flannel bathrobe, and after a few hundred dirty jobs, demonstrably and undeniably indestructible. This is the kind of sweatshirt girlfriends like to permanently borrow, but I've held on to this one because I got it from American Giant. American Giant makes all their stuff right here in the USA, so they can control every link in their own supply chain. That matters, because when you buy American Giant, you not only get great quality, you create jobs for people in factory towns all over the country. No pressure, but if you give a damn about the business of making things in America, you got to support the companies who are doing it right. Go to American-Giant.com/Mike to get 20% off your first order. That's American-Giant.com/Mike.
Hey guys, welcome to a really fun and exciting episode of TFL's Talking Cars, because today we're going to be talking about all things Kia and all things electric. Which is near and dear to my heart. And with me is Steve Kozowski. And Steve, I'll have you say your title. It's a long one.
The manager of long-range strategy and planning.
Which I guess translates to the guy who does the EVs in America for Kia. Is that right?
More or less.
Okay.
Sit back and relax, or keep driving if you're driving. TFL Talking Cars is on the air, the world's most popular car podcast. Okay, maybe not yet, but we're working on it.
Let's talk about electric vehicles, because we just had the Niro in our office for 3 months. And I got to tell you, I had so much fun with that car, especially since it's so torquey. You know, doing a front wheel drive burnout is not something I expected to be doing. But was there actually planning or strategy behind putting that much torque through the front wheels when you were developing the vehicle?
Well, you know, I've had a chance to drive the car, and the first time we drove the car and toggled through eco mode and normal and sport and so forth, we were blown away at how strong it was. And that's testament to the torque and the linearity and the potential and the fun to driveness of EVs. So, you know, it's a really cool aspect of EVs, and I think it's also an element that's going into the marketing and the positioning and the presentation of the cars in the market, that they are in fact quite fun to drive. But you know, early on in the development of the Niro and the Niro EV, the target customers and the fit into the market was really set up around maximizing the utility of the car, because it's got a great package. You know, it's got a long wheelbase. It's got a sizable functional utility aspect to it. And the approach with the Niro EV was it happens to be electric, just like the regular Niro happens to be hybrid. But the pleasant byproduct of the torque that's available in the motor, 291 pound-feet in a car that weighs, what, 3,800 pounds, it's pretty remarkable. It's a really fun to drive proposition. It's a pleasant surprise.
Yeah, and you know, it's got all the Kia-ness, I'm going to go with, that you'd expect out of a Kia, right? So there is just a really easy to operate instrument cluster, and you get a lot of value for your money. I always look at Kia as a brand where, you know, you guys are putting heated seats in places that premium cars have heated seats, and not, you know, most cars. So, you know, I'm always like pleasantly surprised when I see a heated seat in the back on a Kia as opposed to just the front. Is this a strategy part of the company, or is this something that you guys think long and hard about?
We do think long and hard about it. And there's a lot of passionate discussion about the contenting and the strategy and the approach to features and so forth. And trying to understand, you know, what the customers prioritize and value. It's always a very careful balance between what's required to be competitive on a certain grade versus, you know, for example, a Toyota Prius or a Honda Accord or something like that. Versus what our customers value. And, you know, to be frank, there's a lot of moving parts that go into that because, we've had a lot of success in packing the cars with a lot of content and value, and we want to continue that. So we do look very carefully and strategically. And, you know, like a perfect example is the heated seats, heated and cooled seats, or leather, or the audio and navigation and so on and so forth. So we're very considerate of our customers' wants and needs and the price points and maintaining a certain value proposition as you start from the LX and go to the EX and the touring and so forth.
Yeah, so let me ask you, you know, your title is long-term planner. Right now, I think the statistic is that something like 1-2% of all cars in America are electric. Where do you see that going? Is the future in Kia's mind electric? And if so, how are you going to address that? Because right now you have a smattering of electric cars, but if indeed the future is electric, where are you guys going with it? Or is it electric?
Well, yeah, so I think it's fair to say that the future is electric. And for a variety of reasons. One is, from the standpoint of Kia, you know, we have a $25 billion plan that was announced in February called Plan S, and that's to invest in significantly into multiple EVs for markets around the world. So in terms of Kia, there's no question that the future is electrified. As we 10 years from now, if we're having this conversation, Roman, we're going to be looking at, 11 EVs or more around the world and a significant number of EVs and PHEVs in the United States market for a variety of reasons. One is the automakers seeing the need in the market for electrified propulsion. It's actually cheaper to operate or lower cost to operate in many instances, but also to help reduce CO2 emissions globally. So therefore, it's incumbent upon the car companies to produce vehicles that emit less CO2. But there's also, in the context of Kia, a big shift in the brand direction. Again, longer term, to be more electrified, to be more, I guess, we'll call it techie, to offer new mobility solutions. So there's sort of a very broad scope on where the brand is going, and the centerpiece of that is electrified propulsion. I do think in the marketplace, if you just look at the investment that's in place from pretty much every manufacturer around the world, there's no question that electric cars are the next big thing. And, you know, in the market right now, it's about 1.3% of EVs all in between PHEVs and EVs. It's about 2%, as you noted. This has potential to go significantly higher, anywhere from 6 to 10% or more. It depends on a lot of moving parts. But if you just look at the forward investment by the top three or four manufacturers participating in the United States or around the world, there's no question that, and again, including Kia, that EV CEVs are the next big thing. And we will be a significant part of it. And they make a lot of sense for the U.S. market because U.S. consumers like crossovers, higher hip point, better visibility, lots of functionality. And from a packaging point of view, you can fit the battery underneath. It enables all-wheel drive. So, I think Also, if you kind of look at the U.S. market and EVs, maybe globally, and you think about EV 1.0 and EV 2.0 and EV 3.0, and those are various phases of where we are headed out to, say, 2030, I think we're about EV 2.0. And there's a handful of cars that are built on dedicated EV platforms. And again, looking at the forward investment and these new platforms and what it means to the marketplace, we are entering a revolutionary period, probably in the next 3 or 4 years, where the products that are coming, again, from Kia and the industry as a whole are just going to blow your mind. And I think it means that the 1.3 or 1.5% adoption of EVs, which is sort of on the fringe, is going to move massively as the products are engineered and evolved much more closely to the U.S. consumers' tastes. And again, the technology is incredible. Thinking about energy density of batteries, motor design, motor efficiency. I mean, if you're enjoying 291 pound feet in the Niro EV, and thinking about what's over the horizon a little bit, you're going to be grinning from ear to ear, you know, constantly. It's going to be really amazing.
Yeah, and, you know, if I look at this from an automotive journalist standpoint, you know, manufacturers are always looking for white space, right? Someplace where there's nobody else in. And you know, with an ICE car, there isn't a lot of white space, right? You really have to go into some kind of deep weeds to figure out where a segment exists that no one else is at. But in the EV world, man, there is all kinds of white space, right? Everything from right now the pickup truck all the way to the sports car. These two things, as far as I know, don't exist. And when I say don't exist, there's plans and companies are building them. But you, when I say exist, you can't go out and buy them. And yet, for some reason, many of the manufacturers have concentrated on like economy cars, right? And I always kind of scratch my head because I'm like, why don't you go to where the buyers are at? Like you said, the crossovers. The more popular vehicles, all-wheel drive is so easy in an electric car compared to even a traditional car. And yet many of the cars that are out there are front-wheel drive, which is also weird because, you know, the reason the car started out front-wheel drive was because it was a spacing and kind of a vehicle packaging constraint, right? And with an electric motor, you don't have that anymore. You can have a frunk. So where is Kia going next? You know, what's the next segment that we're going to see something that actually is more kind of in that sweet zone where people are at right now, where your customers are at?
Yeah. So I think that the next couple of things that are over the horizon for us, in the Plan S discussion in February, there was mention of our first dedicated EV. Which I think will be revealed in 2020. It'll be on sale in the United States after that in 2021. But that first vehicle will be a dramatic statement for Kia. It'll show the flexibility of a dedicated architecture, and it will blur the lines between crossover car forms. And I think it'll be, I know it'll be a breakthrough execution in terms of the aesthetic and proportions and design and surfacing and technology. So for us, I think, you know, talking about the white space that's available, I think the EV architecture, the platform capability really lends itself to, you know, this is a cliche, but out of the box thinking. And as you apply EV technology, the battery, the motors, and all that to various parts of the market, it's remarkable what design and engineering can do to change the aesthetic. And again, the first dedicated EV that's coming from Kia will reflect this newfound flexibility, backed up again with remarkable performance, 300 miles of all-electric range, a suite of desirable functional technologies that you'll really like. So, but in the market space, if you think about this, you know, a lot of the automakers around the world, they first approached EVs I think the logic was that, look, we got to make EVs that will work in Europe and Asia and the United States. So we're going to start with B and C segment cars, small cars, and see how they work and learn and develop. And then they've been slowly scaling up a little bit. And as that's what I'm saying, like by the time we reach EV 3.0, which is maybe 12, 18 months from now, you're going to have electric powertrains applied to a variety of new, different, larger categories. And we're seeing this, for example, again, with CUVs, but also trucks. I mean, you look at the, what is it, six or seven different electric pickup trucks that are coming. So, it enables dramatic changes in proportions and aesthetic and capability. And two, a little further, think about, you know, MPVs, vans, dedicated architecture. You know, the company has invested in a couple different MPV companies. Arrival is one, Canoe is another. And those are companies that are revealing that with battery architecture and motor packaging and so forth, you can offer a dramatically different aesthetic and function with an MPV. But getting back to what we're working on, I think that as we go forward, you're going to see dramatic new offerings in terms of blending, at least for Kia, car and crossover on our first dedicated EV, and then some pretty desirable surprises a couple years out.
We do what we call the world's toughest electric car test, called the Loveland Trials, and we actually took the Niro up it. We drive an electric vehicle from our offices here in Boulder up to the Loveland Pass, which is about 75 miles straight up a mountain, and we see how it does using power going up a mountain, and then we see how it regens. And we just ran the new Mini EV up that, and that only has a range of about 110 miles officially. And so we had to actually recharge it on the way back. We wouldn't have made it because it would be 150 miles round trip if you could, you know, do it, but the car can't. Mm-hmm. And what we ran into was we went to an Electrify America station, and they had 8 chargers, and 3 of them were broken. Mm-hmm. And then next door is, of course, the Tesla superchargers. I think there's 12 and they all work. So the media thought I had was, when manufacturers are building these cars, are they also giving some thought to building out their own charging infrastructure? Because if you're kind of counting on partners to do that, then you may end up in a situation where, like we did, you know, where 3 out of the 8 chargers aren't working. And I don't know what happened. You know, we're talking with Electrify America to try to figure it out. But has there been any thought given by Kia to actually create its own charging network?
Well, you bring up a really, really important point, and that's infrastructure and charging. And a couple of things. What we discovered with the first generation Soul EV and the second, the Niro EV, is that about 80 to 90% of charging is done at home and work. In fact, it might even be a little higher than that in some instances for a variety of reasons. And that primarily is reliability, right? I know I can charge at home and I know I can charge at work. The public infrastructure is definitely improving. It's changing. It's evolving. Electrify America is pouring literally billions into it. And the other entities like EVgo, ChargePoint, they're also working diligently. So, but I think that, the automakers are looking at this, trying to do their best in terms of engineering the cars to, you know, for example, to have a DC fast charging. And also, you do see a lot of alliances and partnerships within the industry with other charging entities. You know, for example, partnering with Electrify America or partnering with EVgo, that kind of thing. But EV infrastructure, as you know, Roman, is just really expensive, and it's resource intensive in terms of managing the uptime and managing the maintenance and so forth. So I think for most automakers, they are focusing on the product and their engineering resources that go into the battery tech and the motor tech and creating the cars. But what is clear to me, though, and probably clear to the industry, I have to say, is that any significant EV proposition requires an infrastructure solution. And, you know, for example, early on when Kia went to market, we developed partnerships with Bosch and AeroVironment and Leviton to, you know, vet the level two home chargers out to make sure that, look, you can get this one, and this one. We've tested them. They work. That's just one first step. But I do think that the higher volume requirements and the much more significant sales and marketing efforts by the automakers, ourselves included, will need a deeper partnership with the infrastructure providers and charging system providers. But I don't have anything at the moment to offer in terms of what we would do. Yeah.
All right. The other I think big thing with electric cars, and I'll give you an example of this. I was reading a study recently, and it asked people, like, you know that if you have a plug-in hybrid, you never actually have to plug it in, and most people did not understand that, right? They thought that a plug-in hybrid was the same as an electric car. And so the hardest thing I found in my life to do was to sell something where you also have to educate the consumer what the value of that is, right? And I think, you know, when you get to that that point where it goes from 1% to like 10%, you're going to have to do a really good job in educating people so that they actually know the difference between a plug-in hybrid versus a pure EV. How is Kia going to meet that challenge?
That's a big challenge, Roman. I see it and feel it regularly. You know, I go to the auto shows and I talk to customers. I go to the EV ride and drives and I talk to customers. And we're asked regularly about, the EV side of the proposition is pretty clear now. Like, oh, I have to plug it in at home or I can charge at work. Okay, I get that. But I also get the question about, well, wait a minute, it has a plug. I have to put gasoline. Yeah, I have to put gasoline in it. I plug in at home too. Yeah, you can plug in at home. And, you know, they kind of scratch their head a little bit. And so there is that confusion, and these cars have been on the market for 10 years now. So it's incumbent upon the manufacturers to train the dealers and to have pretty simple marketing messages on the websites product information to simply explain about how this works. One of the things that's cool about electrified propulsion is that there is a pretty close-knit community of customers and on the forums and so forth. So, and the other part of it too is that we are starting to see a lot of these customers come back into market. So, you know, if you had a PHEV, you might be buying another one or shifting over to EV. So you're kind of familiar with it, but it is the newcomers that where we have some work to do with respect to the materials, the training materials for dealers, and also the information for newcomers.
Yeah, I think you just put your finger on it. You know, it's funny. I did a show maybe a year and a half ago with the local head of like the Dealers Association, and I was talking about what dealers think of electric cars, and he was like, "Oh, we love electric cars. It's the future." And then when you get them offline, dealers hate electric cars for obvious reasons, right? They don't require a lot of maintenance. You don't need to bring them in. And a lot of modern dealerships' revenue now comes from service. And electric cars don't need any fluids. They don't need any, changing of filters. It's pretty much just plug it in and use it. So what has your strategy been to kind of talk to your dealers about the fact that this is coming and that they shouldn't fear it? But they should embrace it, or maybe they don't want to embrace it. I don't know. What are you hearing from those guys?
Well, it's kind of mixed, Roman. What we've seen, again, we've only been in the business really about 3 or 4 years. And the rollout, our EV launch started in California, and then it went up the coast to Oregon and Washington, then made its way to the East regions or East region. So, but what we've seen is that there's some dealers who really get behind and focus on it, and they're able to make a business out of it, which is to say that the volume is sufficient, and they're able to do quite well. Of course, as you mentioned, service and parts are a pillar of a dealer's revenue and profit. So that is a consideration. But, I think what we've done in many markets is we have dealers, big dealers, who are able to sell pretty significant volumes of EVs. But, at the same time, they have a robust parts and service business, built on cars like the Soul and the Optima and the Sorento, and of course now the Telluride. So there's not so much of a threat because the business is there, but that is a legitimate concern. And you can look at the NADA, and you can look across the industry, and you can see some dealers who are talking about this.
It's funny. I was talking with one of the Hyundai designers, kind of a sister company, Chris. I can't think of his last name now. And he was telling me, he used to work at BMW. He's telling me that one of the things that really sets Kia and Hyundai apart is that you guys work twice as hard. You're kind of the new kids on the block, and you feel like you really have to prove yourselves. So you're out there really pushing hard to, if you're BMW, you've got this legacy of building cars, or Mercedes, right? The very first car, whereas Kia is a new company, in relative terms. Mm-hmm. There's a little bit of a chip on your shoulder. So do you think that helps in terms of embracing electrified cars versus having this long legacy, that goes back to the very first diesel, if you're Mercedes, you know what I mean? Is that kind of a more, is it easier to embrace the disruption that electric cars are bringing to the business?
Yes. I think the short answer is yes. And, the attitude and the posture in this company has been a little bit edgy. And there is a point of view, a perspective amongst our leadership and the employees to take some chances, take some risks, see how things work. And you can see it in some of our cars, like the original Soul and the 2011 Optima. We've taken some chances, and I also think that as a brand, we have the latitude to take some risks and take some chances. So it's in some sense part of our DNA, and it's also in some sense expected in the marketplace from Kia. So I think actually that puts us in a nice position relative to what EV technology, the platform and everything else allows the cars to be, which again fits with a little bit of the edginess of the Kia brand. So I think that's a really cool point that you bring up, Roman.
Yeah, and sometimes as a journalist, it's easy for me to come up with these ideas because, there's not a lot at stake here. But like, I would love, the Telluride is probably one of my favorite cars of the last year. Just nailed it out of the ballpark, right? Every so often a car comes along that has it all, right? The styling, the value, the performance, the fuel economy, the size, I'm just going down the list of everything that works on the Telluride. And wouldn't it be cool if you put two electric motors in it and a battery pack? And I gotta say, I've been watching like a lot of shows where they're going back and electrifying like classic cars, on TV. And it doesn't seem that hard. It seems like an internal combustion engine is much harder to engineer. And especially when you're pushing the envelope with like direct injection or doing some of the stuff that, that you guys are doing. Sticking two electric motors and a bunch of batteries into an existing platform doesn't seem like it would be that difficult. And I would love to see like an electric Telluride go up against the Tesla Model Y, and you'd have a vehicle that that is, I think, in a lot of ways built better because, you guys know how to build cars and you've been doing it longer. So the quality is there. I'm not trying to just jump on Tesla, but we have a Model X right now. And, the gaps and the panels don't line up, for what the standard is. So, you said there, 10 years from now, there's going to be, 12 cars that are electrified by Kia. Is that one of the kinds of cars that we'll be seeing? Something that's, you know, maybe all-wheel drive, that is a family-based crossover, you know, that is like right in the heart of where the segment is right now, where people are shopping?
So I agree with you 100%. And I think it is remarkable what the batteries and motors do for the car in terms of fun to drive, linearity, quiet. It's just a remarkable experience. And you get gobs and gobs of torque, which is great for towing. The package space, for example, in a utility vehicle can be huge when the shadow of the vehicle on the outside is not quite as huge. So there's so many strengths to doing with what you're describing. And, you know, I can tell you, Roman, that we see the opportunity that you do with respect to like a battery electric Telluride. It's not something we can really talk about or disclose at the moment, but I think, you know, as we talk about the evolution of this part of the industry, and what the U.S. consumers want. And I mean, look, there's what, 1.7 million units of midsize SUVs that were sold last year. That's a huge market. And when you talk to consumers about this and you lay out what you described, which is, you know, a three-row midsize EV SUV with 475 pound-feet, charge it at home, you know, 0 to 60 in 6 seconds or lower, and so on and so forth. There's a lot of people who are quite interested in that. And so I think what you're describing is a very interesting concept. It aligns nicely with the US market. You know, it sounds simplistically, well, why don't you just take the, you know, the floor pan out of a Telluride and put a, you know, 90 kilowatt hour battery and a motor in front, motor in back. But of course, it is much more complicated and complex from a variety of reasons, you know, that relate to manufacturing and crash and cost and a lot of other aspects, as you know. But I do think that as these platforms evolve, as the technology evolves, as the costs come down, everything you're describing can kind of scale up and down the segments within the industry. And if you talk about this formula you just mentioned, think about applying that to other vehicles in the lineup and how cool that would be. So,
sports car. You have a sports car. You have a really cool sports car.
Yeah, exactly. So, stay tuned, I guess, is the simple answer. And just know that as we implement and execute our Plan S, you know, getting to about 20% of our sales volume by 2025 or 26 as EVs, that there's a lot of white space, a lot of clean sheet opportunities here, Roman. And that's about all I can say at the moment.
Yeah, now I want to take a step back because I can see the comments already. You know, a lot of people will say, well, it's only 1% of the market. You know, why do you think that electric cars are the future? And it's not something that we're just pulling out of midair, right? I mean, you look at, I'll give you two examples, right? Look at countries like Norway, where now electric cars represent the majority of all cars sold. And I'm not saying that the Norway points the way to America, but when you have a country where now the majority of all cars sold are electric, then that's a pretty big kind of, you know, sign saying this way. Or for me, you know, the moment where it kind of, the aha moment was where forever, I used to grow up, you know, loving cars and like the midsize performance luxury sedan that was always the watermark was the BMW 3 Series, right? That was growing up reading Car and Driver. That was always the one that won the shootouts. Mm-hmm. And when the Tesla Model 3 worldwide outsold the BMW 3 Series, that's a pretty big, you know, sign pointing at electric cars are coming.
Right.
And so for all the people out there are thinking, well, you know, it's been good enough for my dad and my grandfather, why do I need it? I would say, you know, you probably haven't driven an electric car. Or maybe you should go try driving an electric car because, you know, as a performance guy, the torque is And what I mean by torque is acceleration, right? The torque is about acceleration. Horsepower is about top speed. But the torque is, that's why we started this conversation about just, you know, the front wheel drive burnout. Torque is exhilarating, right? You point and shoot. It's just a lot of fun. The other thing now, you know, we're doing this over Zoom because of the pandemic. You know, with the world economy shutting down, it was really nice to have like clean air. I don't know, you know, how much nicer it was in California, but it was a lot nicer here. And when I get behind the wheel of our long-term Tesla or the Niro, I always felt good because I know that I'm not polluting and pouring a lot of smoke. And the other comment is going to be, no, you know, you're just moving it downstream. Well, the argument's been done, guys. It's you know, once upon a time when all of our energy production came from coal, you probably were moving it downstream. But now a lot of our energy production comes from renewables, be it hydroelectric or solar or wind. So it is clean energy. And then of course the other argument is, well, the batteries are really dirty. And I'm like, have you watched on these shows? I mean Teslas are worth their weight in gold because of the batteries, even after they're crashed, right? So people are naturally recycling them. There's this, and that's going to happen with all brands, not just Tesla. I'm just using them as an example. I just wanted to kind of bring that out there so people understand why we're talking about this. That it's not just, you know, not just some like crazy, you know, pie in the sky. this is something that only, you know, you guys in California and Colorado want, but here in Texas, you know, we're going to be driving our pickup trucks. And I'm like, yeah, and they're going to be hybrid and they're going to be electric and it's going to be cool. So I'm glad the Kia is, you know, is kind of in the forefront of this. What are you most excited about? If you're looking down the road 10 years from now, what gets you the most excited?
Well, I think all of the above, which is the incredible advancements in electrification technology in terms of energy density, performance, lower cost, the flexibility and freedom it gives engineers and designers to make really, really cool, fast, fun new products. That to me is super exciting. But also, you know, there's a lot of other tech that's coming on the inside of the car in terms of augmented reality, heads-up display, over-the-air updates. A lot of the connected car connectivity stuff that's coming is going to blow your mind. And I think, you know, thinking about things like 5G and all of this, there is this sea change that's happening in terms of automotive technology across the board, whether it's electrification, materials, mass reduction, internal combustion. It's incredible. So, you know, we have a really strong power, it's really strong lineup right now. But, you know, what's coming is just something to behold. And every year it just keeps getting better and better and better. So I'm truly excited about the EVs we have coming in the next 12 to 18 months. What's over the horizon a little farther is equally mind-blowing and impressive. And I think, you know, the company in the industry is at a major inflection point. And, you know, a lot of things, Roman, tied to COVID, the economy, society, demography, technology, and maybe for the next two or three or four years, there's going to be some churn. But what's coming is really incredible. And I think that's what's exciting about Kia is, as a brand, we recognize this and we're able to devise products and strategies and offerings to our consumers that are reflective of all that. They're going to be cool. They're going to be fast, fun, efficient, affordable, desirable, and will really put a smile on your face. You really enjoy it.
Yeah. What do you guys see as the biggest obstacle to adoption for electric vehicles? Do you see it as price, or do you see it as charge time, or do you see it as range? I mean, or is it all of the above? You know, you must do a lot of studying about that. What are the obstacles that you see your buyers most stumbling upon?
Yep, it's all the above. Definitely cost and price. It's charging infrastructure and then range. Those are like the top three things: price, range, charging infrastructure. And like I said, some of the folks who've been in EVs or PHEVs, maybe 5 or 6 or 7 years ago, who are now coming back, it's super easy for them to move to a Nero EV. But there's a lot of other things that are attached to this. So product wise, the products are getting better and better and better. 300 miles is a tipping point, as 200 miles was. And what's over the horizon for 350 and 400 and so forth will make it that much easier for EV adoption. But it's infrastructure, which is getting better and better every day. And also from our point of view as a distributor, it relates to the marketing and the training and the distribution and so forth. So those are sort of the top line bogeys or hurdles. It's getting better, and again, with the cost and price reductions in the future, we're optimistic.
Yeah, and as we go further down this road, obviously the tax incentives are drying up. You still have much of yours, right, as a brand, but mm-hmm. Tesla's burned through theirs. How important is that? I mean, $7,500 as a federal is a lot. In Colorado, we were at $5,000. This year, we went to $4,000 and then goes to $3,000. I mean, mm-hmm. that's a lot of money on the table. How important are those federal incentives in your business plan or local incentives?
Both. It's very, very important. And you bring up a really good point, because Kia as a brand is advantaged because we have a significant number of 7,500 tax credits available for us for years to come, which is going to be helpful. But there's no doubt that until the cost comes down significantly to where the cost and the price are similar to that of an internal combustion car. And a lot of folks have thrown out $100 per kilowatt hour, or maybe even less. And that's definitely the vector, which is down and to the right. There's no question about that. But until we get there, there's state subsidies and the federal tax incentive that can take $10,000, $12,000, $13,000 off the consumer's price, and that makes the car much more compelling. So I think, to answer your question, they're very, very important. Whenever there's something that comes up on the legislative front in terms of reductions of this or changes in that, we are huge advocates. And it's notable. Yeah, you mentioned Colorado. There's also other states like New Jersey, New York, and of course California. So there's a lot of importance to the final price of the car that's tied directly to the local incentive, and we fully support it all the way.
Yeah, let me just kind of put some cars and numbers to what we're talking about so people can kind of visualize this. So I believe the Nero that we had for our long-term tester was 42,000, maybe something like that. And in Colorado, that car would have cost you about 30, right? Because it would have been 7.5 federal, and then at that time we got a 5,000 local. So yeah, that's a $30,000 car, which is still a significant amount of money. Now if we're looking at a different segment, that Mini we just tested, the one that we had I think was 37, but they started at 29. So if you started a $29,000 car and then you take $12,000 off of that, now you're talking about an $18,000 car. At that point, it starts to make a lot of sense for a lot of people, even though the range on that car was only 110 miles. But let's say you had an $18,000 car where the range was, like you said, at that tipping point, or at least the previous one, 200 miles, right? That becomes, I think,
a very attractive option for a lot of people. And let's face it, most of the current crop of electric cars out there are expensive, right? They're certainly not affordable. And then when you have, you know, Tesla Model S's and Model X's that cost $87,000, or a Performance $120,000, a Porsche Taycan, $126,000, Turbo S $186,000, it doesn't help establish the electric car as the people's car.
Yeah. That's a legitimate point. Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
I'm hoping that you guys, you know, as the value brand, will kind of shatter that myth and actually, you know, create an electric vehicle that a person can buy and afford, because once you get them, they're much less expensive to actually maintain and run. It depends, of course, you know, how you charge. You know, these are all, there's a lot to this equation, right? It depends how you charge them, where you charge them. But like you said, home charging, especially at night, is very affordable. We just did a video today where we actually took the Model X and we towed against the Lexus LX. And it was still cheaper, even at, you know, cheap gas, which is as cheap as it ever gets, right? Here in Colorado, we're paying about $1.90 a gallon. I'm sure in California, you can probably add a dollar to that, right? I'm guessing it's always more expensive
there.
Yeah. Yep. But even at these low prices, if you charge at home, then electric vehicles are still cheaper to run. And I think they're still cheaper to maintain. And they're still cheaper to own in the long run. So there's a lot of pluses for electric vehicles.
Absolutely.
Before we run out of time, I promise 45 minutes, we're almost there. What segment of car are you looking forward to the most? You know, so right now we've got a plethora of sedans that are electric. I call them, you know, converted economy cars, small crossovers. When the Cybertruck came out, everybody lost their, you know what? there are no sports cars except for the Roadster that I know of. So, but what segment are you like the most excited about that hopefully Kia will be working on, will be coming down the road?
Well, I think, you know, personally speaking, I have my own preferences, but in the context of my job and my employer and our business, I think the next big thing that's really important to us in the industry will be EV SUVs and all different sizes and flavors of them. I think the attributes of electrification we're talking about here are going to fit so wonderfully with these cars. And again, develop them all new dedicated EV platforms. The performance, the package, the tech, it's going to be incredible. So I'm really looking forward to, so the first thing is our dedicated EV that's coming, you know, more than a year away, but you'll see it sooner. That's going to be a really exciting car that will help reshape the Kia brand and be a nice dramatic statement for us. And then after that, you know, you have to think about like the next generation Euro EV. I mean, if you think the current car is good, think about what's over the horizon with respect to that one. And then a whole wave of new EV vehicles from Kia. You know, we talked about how many new EVs are planned all the way to 2030. So there's so many fantastic Kia products that are coming. But for me, I think to answer your question, I think the slurry of EV SUVs that are coming will be really, really cool. Yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong. I like fast cars. To begin with, I owned an NSX for a couple of years and I missed that car. I love high performance sports cars as much as the next guy, and muscle cars too. Don't get me wrong. There's nothing like a, you know, big black Chevy, but the, for the broader market and what really fits well with American consumers, will be the EV SUV in various different forms and flavors.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to the first sports car, the first truck, the first muscle car, because an electric muscle car is truly going to be astounding.
Yeah.
But thank you very much. Go ahead.
I was going to say, yeah, you can see a little taste of that with some of the stuff that's been like the COPO Camaro EV.
Right.
And the Mustang EV and so forth, and not to mention the Tesla Roadster and so forth. There's there's been some remarkable little teasers, if you will, of what's coming. So sorry to interrupt you there.
Oh, no worries. I also owned an NSX, and then I traded it in on my son, Tommy, so when he was born.
I traded mine for a house.
There you go. Yeah. And I do miss that car, but I'm excited to see that Kia is, you know, in the horse race. I can't wait to see the very first car that comes out that's going to be hopefully, you know, out very soon. And yeah, can't wait to take it up to Loveland Trials when it actually rolls off the assembly line. So guys, thank you very much for taking the time and joining us and looking a little bit into the future of what Kia is doing. Thank you, Steve, for kind of, you know, pulling back the curtain a little bit. Usually with manufacturers, I can't tell you how special this is, because the typical comment we get is we don't talk about future products. So I'm very grateful that you did share a little bit of future product. And of course, that's because you've got all the other competitors looking at what you're going to be doing. And so why show them your cards? So I'm grateful that you did give us a peek of what's happening at Kia. And yeah, if you guys are interested, go to tflcar.com for more news, views, and of course, real world reviews. Thank you, Steve. And thank you, Shamik. I know you're here. I really appreciate it. See you guys next time. Ciao.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.